Blog Talk Radio.
If it's Sunday, it's Wrestling Night in America here on PWTorchDailyCast.com. Good Sunday evening from May 28th, 2023. I am Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks, and this is Wrestling Night in America. We had a very big weekend of pro wrestling that just wrapped up with the main event of AEW's Double or Nothing pay-per-view. And we are opening the lines to talk about all of it. Usually when we're here on an evening where an AEW pay-per-view has just happened, we like to focus on that singular event, take your phone calls and emails on that show. But because this was such a big weekend, Impact Under Siege Friday night, WWE Night of Champions yesterday afternoon, NXT Battleground tonight, and Double or Nothing tonight as well, we want to talk about it all. So call in 515-605-9345. I was right. And WNIALivecast@gmail.com are the ways you can contact us here tonight. Usually I go through the show match by match, give my thoughts on it, and boom, we're off to the races. Tonight, because we have four shows, I'm just going to run through the results, and whatever you want to talk about, we'll talk about. So starting with Impact Under Siege, we had the opening match is Nick Aldis versus Kenny King. Nick Aldis returning to Impact Wrestling and beating Kenny King in the opener of Under Siege. Match number two was Rich Swann, Sami Callihan, and Jake Crist over The Design. Match number three, Trinity defeating Giselle Shaw. And then we had Ace Austin and Chris Bay defeating Mark Andrews and Flash Morgan Webster for the tag titles. They retained the tag titles in this one. Trey Miguel defeated Chris Sabin to retain the X Division Championship. Alex Shelley defeated Eddie Edwards, Kazarian, Jonathan Gresham, Moose, and Yuya Uemura in a number one contenders match for the Impact Championship. So Alex Shelley will be the one who will be facing off against the champion. Deonna Purrazzo defeated Jordan Grace in a last chance knockouts title match. Jordan Grace finishing up with Impact Wrestling per Fightful, so we'll just see where she goes next, whether it's WWE, AEW, or somewhere else. And then Steve Macklin defeating PCO in a no disqualification match for the Impact title. The aftermath here, Steve Macklin and Bully Ray putting Scott D'Amore, Impact president, through a flaming table. So that was the finish of the Impact Under Siege show on Friday night. Then we had WWE's Night of Champions. Yesterday afternoon from the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, 1 p.m. Eastern start time. And this was Seth Rollins defeating AJ Styles in the opener to win the newly created world title that will be defended on the Raw brand. Match number two, Trish Stratus defeating Becky Lynch. This came about due to interference from Zoe Stark, who was brought to the main roster in the draft from NXT. So it looks like we'll be getting a Zoe Stark-Becky Lynch feud, although it also feels like she's not completely done with Trish Stratus. Gunther defeated Mustafa Ali in an Intercontinental Championship match. And that went about as you would have expected, Ali getting in some hope spots there. The fourth match, Asuka defeating Bianca Belair to win the Raw Women's Championship, even though both women are on SmackDown. So Asuka now the Raw Women's Champion. Rhea Ripley defeating Natalya in about a minute to retain the SmackDown Women's Championship, even though Ripley and Natalya are now on SmackDown, or now on Raw, rather. So we'll have to see what happens with the Raw and SmackDown championships. Match number 6, Brock Lesnar defeating Cody Rhodes via ref stoppage. So Cody coming into this with a broken arm. Lesnar using the Kimura lock to wear him down. Cody did not tap. Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens defeating Roman Reigns and Solo Sikoa in a tag title match. Sikoa was the one pinned here. Jimmy Uso with the big story coming out of this as he super kicked Roman Reigns twice. He'd finally had enough. So the next chapter of this story starting this week on TV as we see how Roman Reigns reacts to Jimmy Uso turning on him and costing him and Solo the tag titles. NXT Battleground was tonight, the next offering from WWE this weekend. Wes Lee defeated Tyler Bate and Joe Gacy to retain the North American Championship. Noam Dar defeated Dragon Lee in a rounds match to retain the NXT Heritage Cup. We had Lash Legend interfere to help Noam Dar win. Ilya Dragunov defeated Donovan Dijak in a last man standing match in what was probably the match of the evening for Battleground. Gallus defeated the Creeds to retain the NXT tag titles. Tiffany Stratton defeated Lyra Valkyria in a nice match to win the NXT Women's Championship. And Carmelo Hayes retaining the NXT title against Bron Breakker in a match that I thought was better than their first offering some time ago. And finally, AEW Double or Nothing. Let me turn the page in my notes. Orange Cassidy won the Blackjack Battle Royal. 21 men. He outlasted them all, including Swerve Strickland, the last man standing before Cassidy was able to win. He retains the AEW International Championship. Adam Cole defeated Chris Jericho via ref stoppage in an unsanctioned match. FTR defeated Jeff Jarrett and Jay Lethal with Mark Briscoe as the referee. This was to retain the AEW Tag Team Championship. By the way, R.E. Cole and Jericho, they will meet again on Dynamite this week, only it will be Adam Cole and Britt Baker against Chris Jericho and Saraya. Wardlow defeated Christian Cage in a ladder match for the TNT Championship, so Wardlow retains the TNT Championship. Toni Storm defeated Jamie Hayter for the AEW Women's Championship. Jamie Hayter was hurt coming into this one, so they kept it relatively short. The House of Black set out an open challenge. It was answered by the Acclaimed. So the Acclaimed and Billy Gunn, House of Black retained. They won the trio's titles here. Match number 7, Jade Cargill defeating Taya Valkyrie to retain the TBS Championship. But wait. Smart Mark Sterling sets out an open challenge. Chris Statlander, returning from a torn ACL, answers the challenge and defeats Jade Cargill. Yes, Jade Cargill with her first loss. And she loses the TBS Championship. So Chris Statlander is your new TBS champion. The AEW Championship was the semi-main event. MJF defeated Darby Allin, Jungle Boy Jack Perry, and Sammy Guevara. He pinned Darby Allin to retain the AEW Championship. And in the main event, it was anarchy in the arena when the Blackpool Combat Club defeated the Elite. Wheeler Yuta pins Kenny Omega, thanks to Konosuke Takeshita interfering on behalf of Don Callis and taking out Kenny Omega. So a heel turn for Takeshita here in the main event of Double or Nothing. It was not made clear whether Callis and Takeshita are part of the Blackpool Combat Club. They kept their distance from the BCC as the group celebrated their win. So it would appear that they are not a part of BCC, but that is something the announcers openly wondered and teased. So we'll have to see. Tune in Wednesday for Dynamite to find out. So that was Double or Nothing, just a a wild weekend. It's whatever the wrestling equivalent of food coma is, I feel like I'm in right now. But we want to talk about it, and we want to hear from you. 515-605-9345. Press 1 if you'd like to talk. You can also email us, wnialivecast@gmail.com. Love to hear your thoughts on any of these four shows here tonight. We're going to have some live correspondent calling in from Double or Nothing. At least that's the plan. And our phone lines are pretty much open. So if you want to chat, we'd love to hear from you. But we do have one caller standing by, and it is our trusty friend, DJ from Miami. DJ, welcome to Wrestling Night in America. What were your thoughts tonight on, anything you want to talk about?
AEW is all right. I want to go into the Jericho thing. It was, like, kind of crazy-ish, like, I don't know. The thing that's funny is, like, when they did the thing, when he hit him with the thing, and then like, all of a sudden, like, when he did his finishing move, I like when he was like, oh, my God, really, that happened? Like, you just hit him with a metal object. Like, you should have got the 1-2-3 right there. I also wanted to say, I can't believe Taz cussed. He said the S word, and he's an announcer. That was kind of crazy. I don't know if it slipped or he wasn't paying attention, but I thought that was funny. But the Adam Cole thing with Jericho is just like, where is it really going to go at the end of the day, you know? I mean, what do you think at the end of the day? I mean, are they going to really push Adam Cole to MJF, or do you think Adam Cole just, you know, be where he was last time?
I think that Adam Cole in the main events against MJF at some point down the line feels right. He has been pretty hot since his return from injury, although tonight was definitely a miss. This was a show that really was cold for the most part in front of the live crowd with a few exceptions, and it really started with Cole versus Jericho. So this was the first real misstep, I think, in Cole's return from injury. We'll have to see how he's able to recover from that over the next few weeks. But really, I think he's a guy who the fans will accept as a top guy. He would feel fresh at the top of the card going against MJF. And, I think that's it does strike me. It feels like they're booking a little backwards here with the mixed tag match on Dynamite this week. I feel like that should have come first, and then you have Jericho and Cole culminating in this unsanctioned match. Instead, they're doing it the opposite way. So we'll have to see what that leads into. That may be more of a focus for the women, Baker and Saraya, and coming out of that, they may be more of the focus. But I definitely think Adam Cole has a lot more upward mobility than where he is right now. And, you know, granted, wrestling Chris Jericho on pay-per-view is not small potatoes or anything like that. But if you're talking being able to oppose MJF and being able to potentially even be a pay-per-view opponent for MJF, I think Adam Cole can be that guy.
I just hope that they really push him in the right direction, because before he got hurt, he was just flat. It was just kind of strange. That I just really hope that they'll push him away from Jericho, you know, and we'll see what happens, you know. The other thing real quick was kind of funny is, like, I like when they're like, this guy had so many concussions, and then, like, 5 minutes later, like, why do they keep on hitting him in the head? Like, it was just kind of crazy, you know, like, they say crazy things. So I thought that was kind of funny, too. But my next thing is, real quick, this is kind of crazy, but am I thinking wrong, or did two girls get beat and they lost their title, but nobody else lost their titles? Or am I crazy?
I guess, yes, Jamie Hayter lost the women's title.
Hayter.
Jade Cargill lost the TBS title.
No, the other guy lost the title. That was nuts.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I don't think that was intentional. I don't think Tony Khan went in going, we're going to have both women drop the title and none of the men. You know, I think it was just the confluence of events of Jamie Hayter's injured, and so they get the title on to Toni Storm. And Chris Statlander is ready to come back from her torn ACL, and she was always apparently the plan to unseat Jade Cargill for the TBS title. So she just happened to be ready at the same time Jamie Hayter was hurt. So that kind of what it felt like to me, rather than some grand scheme to have the women drop the titles, but not not the men.
I just thought it was a little weird. So I never saw that before. I had to mention that, you know. So I was like, that is kind of strange. So I had to ask you about that because I never seen that ever in a show before. Have you?
Oh gosh, I don't know. I'm
that's
sure
what
somewhere
I'm
along.
Like, I never two girl. That's what I'm saying. It's like you have to write that down in the books. I think, you know what I'm saying.
Okay. I'll write
so,
it down.
Okay,
my
last
right
thing.
Here.
My last thing.
Okay.
I don't know what is really going on, but I want to switch to. I will switch. Go across the street. Now, during the show, Rakishi was shooting off on Twitter, saying this and this and this. Now, at the end of the day, Rakishi's old. I don't know what's going to happen. The Rock, Rakishi, whatever. Roman has two belts. What are they going to do with those two belts? Are they going to combine them? I don't understand what they're going to really do at the end of the day with this. Like, I'm so confused. Like, I thought for sure, like, okay, this is over. Everybody's going to their separate, you know, place. And then maybe the, you know, Bloodline will fight with, I don't know, the Judgment or something. And then they throw this wrench into it. But my question is, at the end of the day, what are they going to do with these titles? I'm so confused. This guy still has two titles, and he can't just have two titles forever. I'm confused.
Well, you're right. You can't have two titles forever, literally. But I think what's going to happen is when Roman Reigns loses, he loses both titles. You know, every defense he's had so far, both titles have been on the line. So I assume whether it's Cody Rhodes, whether it's one of the Usos, whether it's The Rock, whomever it is that knocks off Roman Reigns, it's going to be in a match for both titles. So he will lose eventually, DJ. But it will likely be for both titles, I would assume.
I just hope they won't give Cody one and he'd keep the other one or some nonsense. I'm just scared, you know? Or I hope they'll combine them, you know? I just thought that was
see,
a little...
Here's the thing. I think that was a legitimate concern before they introduced the new world title. You can't have three different world champions floating around there. So two is even pushing it for a lot of people. So I don't think there's any risk of splitting the titles that Roman Reigns has now, simply because they've already just introduced a world title for Raw. So they've got two. You can't have three separate titles floating around.
Do you think they'll make a new title by SummerSlam or something, or...?
Make a new title?
You know, so they can combine them so somebody doesn't have to walk around with two titles?
Oh, you mean into, like, one physical belt?
Yes.
No, I think they kind of like Roman having two physical titles. That makes him look more dominant, I guess. So.
All right, I had to ask. I always thought that was funny because I wonder what they're ever going to do with those two titles. I had to ask, you know?
Yeah.
So I guess we'll see. What happens. Monday, you know, with the Sami Zayn and Owens, because, you know, it feels like Owens might turn on, because if you're ever paying attention to Sami's music's playing the most and longest, and everybody's singing along, so I feel like Kevin might, you know.
Yeah, we'll have to see, as you said. Thanks for the call tonight.
Thank you. I'll see you next week.
All right. Again, if you're just tuning in, this is Wrestling Night in America. We are talking all four big events in pro wrestling from this week. AEW's Double or Nothing and NXT's Battleground shows tonight. WWE's Night of Champions from yesterday and Impact's Under Siege from Friday night. If you would like to call in and talk about any of those shows, 515-605-9345 is the number to call. Press 1 to show up in the queue to talk, or just hang out and listen. And you can email us, wnialivecast@gmail.com. So before we go to our live correspondent, I want to welcome in PWTorch.com contributor Marcus Arias. Marcus, we haven't been on the show in a while. His work schedule sort of getting in the way, but wonderful that you could join us here tonight, Marcus. Thank you for being here.
Hey, Greg. Thanks for having me, buddy. I appreciate this. my work schedule changed a while back. A lot of things changed. I moved, new job, new everything. So, you know, had to kind of change things around. But was actually off today. I was off this weekend. Was supposed to be at Double or Nothing, believe it or not. plans changed. Plans changed, pal, as the old adage goes. But thanks for having me tonight. I appreciate you. Man, you've had a lot of stuff to watch this weekend, man.
It has not been easy, but if this is the most difficult thing I have to do this weekend, it's not too bad, right? So we do have our live correspondent on the line, and this is also a PWTorch.com contributor. You may recognize the dulcet tones of Frank Pettiani, who was able to check out Double or Nothing live in Las Vegas tonight. Frank, thanks so much for calling in after the show.
Hey, Greg, thanks for having me on the show. Really appreciate it.
So, Frank, I'm sure you followed along on Twitter, at least for parts of the show, and gauged the reaction of the fans watching at home. How did that compare to your experience watching the show live tonight?
I think it pretty much synced up. I mean, the crowd, I would say, was into certain things. I mean, it wasn't a, quote, dead crowd. But it wasn't the typical AEW crowd that I expected, you know? Like, I expected a lot of energy. I expected people to be into pretty much the whole show. And like I said, they were into certain things, you know, that I'm sure we'll talk about, you know, as you have me on here. But it wasn't what I expected, you know? Like, I think we could compare most of the AEW pay-per-views to the TakeOver era. And I think here at the Torch, we've talked a lot about how, you know, a lot of the NXT fans from those pay-per-views, which usually were not miss. I mean, Greg, I you know, heard you talk about a lot of those shows, and usually none of them were ever bad, you know, and the crowd was usually into them and stuff like that. And that transferred to AEW. And most of the pay-per-views never miss, you know, even up to and including Revolution. You know, and Revolution did not have a big bill, but it delivered. I think we all agree that the last pay-per-view delivered. I don't think this pay-per-view really delivered. I mean, I think the last two matches did, as we'll talk about here as we go along, but it just wasn't what I expected. And I was even messaging with Zach, and I was messaging with Brandon throughout the show. Honestly, this felt like an episode of Dynamite, you know? And there's something that you're charging premium dollar for, man. It should not feel that way. It should feel like a special show, and that it wasn't.
So I think the most interesting thing that people want to know about was the crowd, because you mentioned it. It was a very un-AEW-like crowd for a pay-per-view. At least that's how it came across on television. They seemed hot for the opening Battle Royal. They were shockingly quiet for Jericho Cole and pretty much everything after it until, you know, Chris Statlander came out and then they seemed into the final two matches. Is that how you'd categorize it? Is there anything that, you know, was it a better crowd live than it seemed like on TV?
You could not have worded it any better. That's exactly to the letter what it was. They were into the Battle Royal. You know, I thought the finishing sequence to that was pretty cool and maybe a little overbooked, but whatever, you know, every man, to each his own, right, is what they say.
Mm-hmm.
They did not like to finish Jericho Cole. That absolutely stunk to high heaven. The FTR match, you know. I mean, there were a few spots in there that they were into, but, you know, another interference BS finish. You know, same thing with Wardlow. I mean, just pretty much going throughout the show. I'm just going through it here. Jamie was probably hurt. I'm sure we'll get to that. House of Black, you know, another kind of a dead match. And, yeah, once Statlander cashed in her money in the bank. Oh, I'm sorry. Did I say that out loud? What Statlander came in and challenged Jade, you know, then they got into things, and they were into the rest of the show. So, yeah, pretty much the middle was dead, as you suggested. And, yes, they very sarcastically put in the money in the bank because we know there's no money in the bank in AEW.
I'm curious about the main event and being there live and trying to follow what was going on in that match. It was kind of hard, you know, on TV until they were all back in the ring because there were long stretches where you didn't see what anyone was doing. And then, you know, somebody would hit a move or was about to hit a move and they'd change the camera to somebody else. And then they go back and you see the result of the move that was hit, even though you didn't actually see the move. So how difficult or easy, I guess, was it to follow that match live in the audience?
No, you had it right the first time. It was difficult. And there was one spot I'm like, who is that hitting moves? I'm like, I actually forgot that Danielson was in the match. I was just like, wait a minute. You know, like, oh, yeah, that's Brian Danielson. You know, like, it was just one of those things. But honestly, and I was texting with, and I'll give a shout to longtime Torch VIP listener and reader Brian Cavall. We actually met before the show. And we were texting throughout the show. Like, it was a lot of fun. Like, it actually felt like a bar fight. You know, like, it felt like, you know, stuff was going on. I mean, yeah, it was hard to follow, you know, every nook and cranny as to what was going on, as it would be on TV. You know, it's understandable. You know, you kind of had to go back and forth between the stage. You know, they went up by the band, you know, when I think it was Nick and Wheeler Yuta up on the stage. I couldn't remember. There was so much going on. But, you know, you went to that and you saw what was going on in the ring. So it was a little difficult to follow. I mean, I had never, you know, this was the first match like this that I have seen live. You know, I'm used to seeing this stuff on television. So it was a little bit difficult to follow. But it was still fun. The crowd was into it. I don't know how it came across on TV because Brandon was asking me about that. And I told him that, you know, there were audio issues in the past with AEW. Having been to the UBS shows, the audio, at least in those arenas, absolutely stunk. And, you know, he wasn't sure if the crowd wasn't mic'd up. So I'll turn that around to you. How did it come across to you on television? Did it seem like the crowd was into it for the main event? Because they weren't like, you know, I wouldn't say they were going crazy. They were into it. It was kind of like in the middle, if that makes any sense.
They were into the music, for sure, but they were into the match as well, certainly more than most of the other stuff that was on the show. I want to bring in Marcus at this point. Marcus, do you have any questions about Frank or directed toward Frank from a live perspective here?
Hey, Frankie. Good to hear from you, buddy.
What's up, brother?
Sorry,
absolutely great to talk to you, my friend. It was
right back
in. You know,
man, I'm sorry I missed it tonight, man.
No. And of course, you know, I'll put it out there that we met at WrestleMania, and that was just an awesome experience to talk one on one. So, yeah, what do you got for me, man? Hit me.
First off, how was the beer house?
Oh, awesome. Awesome. Yeah, good. Brian and I met up and just, you know, knocking them back. They were actually playing wrestling themes, like, the whole time we were there. You know, they were known for, like, it was a lot of WWE themes, and then they mixed in a couple of AEW stuff, and, so it was just awesome. You know, it was just a great thing.
Awesome, man. My first question for you about the show, I'll rip the Band-Aid off real quick. Jay White, with him in the Battle Royal, what was the live reaction to him and that elimination?
The crowd was into Jay White. That was one of the pops that I noticed, and the crowd did not like his elimination. I can tell you that right now. I mean, you know, personally, I mean, myself, I didn't like it, you know. But the crowd did not like him getting thrown out the way he got thrown out. So, you know, I don't know what's going on with him in AEW. I don't know what the deal is, but, you know, either Tony's not getting him or, You know, he's got something in mind, and it'll come to fruition soon. But if that's the case, it better, because I think people are losing patience. You know, and I even heard a couple of comments. I was chatting with a couple of guys on the merch line, and they were saying the same thing that I'm saying. Like, what are they doing with Jay White? You know, you bring in this big star, and you know he's messing around with Juice Robinson. You know, and that's very telling. You know, so yeah, not a positive part of the show, my friend.
For sure. That's kind of what I was hearing on my end, but, you know, glad they get, you know, some further info. The Jay White thing, I'm confused by it more than anything. For a company that really likes to, you know, leave the breadcrumb trail out and leave details and play off of histories, they're not touching the backstories with Juice and Jay, which, you know, whatever is what it is. But, you know, to get a big get, and Jay White was a big get. He had options and he chose AEW, and this is where he's at. It just, I don't know. I'm not mad. I'm just disappointed, I think is the right way to go with that one. the other one I was going to ask about was, so I can confirm with the Anakin Arena, when I was there last year, it is super hard to keep up with everything. It's just It's beyond. So, you know, God bless you for staying with it, because that's difficult. There were a ton of really cool moments in that match. What got the biggest pop for that?
I mean, I think there was a spot where I think, was it Yuta who used the screwdriver? Whoever used the screwdriver, that got a pretty big pop. And then, honestly, you want my honest opinion, when Takeshita got revealed, that was the big, that was the biggest pop of them all, you know?
Oh, cool. All right.
And you know what it was? Like, I think a lot of people, you know, because I was talking to Brian about this. If the world title match main evented, that we figured CM Punk would come out with the Anarchy in the Arena, because you know they always like to have a little surprise at the end, you know?
Mm-hmm.
With the Anarchy Arena main eventing, you knew there was going to be a reveal, and Takeshita made a lot of sense, you know? So that got a pretty big pop. I think it was Yuta who got the pin on Kenny, you know, that did it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the crowd was going to cheer whatever happened in that match no matter what. It didn't matter, you know, which kind of speaks, and you know, I'm opening a couple of cans of worms here and trying not to let them all fly out, but, you know, that says a lot about how we feel about the Blackpool Combat Club, you know. you know, that got a pretty good reaction. What was very interesting was actually after the match, and I'm sure pay-per-view went off the air, so I'm probably jumping ahead to, you know, what you or Greg are going to ask here in a second. But Kenny talked about, you know, hey, I hope you guys aren't disappointed with us. And I wasn't sure if he meant disappointed with the Elite or disappointed with AEW. But he said, I've got a couple of friends left. You know, we'll see what happens down the line. And everybody looked at each other and said, Kota Ibushi, like, you know, like that. Like, you know, I don't know who the other friend is. He said a couple of friends, so I don't know if that's Okada or somebody else. But, you know, that was definitely mentioned after the show, and I'm sure that didn't make television. So I don't know. I don't know if they're trying to plant the seed, at least with the live audience, that there may be some people coming. But Kenny did definitely talk about not being disappointed with us. So it's a matter of what the us he was talking about.
Yeah,
awesome,
Frank,
buddy.
You mentioned – sorry, Marcus, do you have another question?
Oh, no. I was just going to say great feedback as always, Frankie. I appreciate it.
Oh, anytime, my friend, anytime.
So, Frank, you mentioned the title match. I'm curious as to what the reaction was from the live crowd to the baby faces in the match. Who got the biggest babyface reaction of the three opponents? And what was the percentage for reaction that MJF got in terms of what percent was babyface reaction, what percent was heel reaction for him?
Honestly, Greg, I don't think one babyface stood out over the other. You know, they were into pretty much everything that everyone was doing. Probably Sammy got the best out of the three, and I mean, technically he's not a babyface, although I was relieving myself when I guess he revealed that Ty is pregnant. Did you hear that on TV? Did you see that?
Yeah.
Yeah, I missed it. I was, you know, I was in the latrine at that point, so I missed it. So I guess maybe because of that, maybe that helped him get the better reaction. But they were also into MJF winning. I mean, MJF got a pretty good reaction coming out, and he got a pretty good reaction winning the match. So, you know, I don't know what that tells you, but, I mean, for me, that tells me that none of the three of those guys, talking about Sammy, Darby and Jungle Boy, none of them really stand out as baby faces, you know, if MJF is getting that reaction. So, you know, and that kind of brings up a lot of vibes of last year. But, you know, again, can of worms. I'm trying not to open on you.
Marcus, anything else for Frank before we let him go?
No, sir. Frankie, I appreciate you. You know, like I say, man, it's always a pleasure talking to you. I'm super bummed that I didn't get a chance to hang out with you this time. But like I said earlier, you know, next time you're in the Bay Area, you're in my neck of the woods, you know, I still owe you for that beer from WrestleMania. So we'll have to do something.
Oh, hey, man, it'll be great to see you. And I appreciate that. And absolutely, man, we'll keep at it. We'll be getting together soon, my friend.
All right, buddy. Cheers, bud.
Cheers.
Frank, last question for you. The crowd size, what was that like? Was it a full house? It looked like there were some pictures of the hard camera with some seats that were empty. What was your impression of the size of the crowd?
Yeah, you're pretty accurate there. I would say looking around, 85% full is probably a guess. I mean, you could see patches of empty seats around. You know, I don't know if it's just a coincidence or whatever, you know, holiday weekend. But, yeah, I mean, it just it didn't feel like a hot show coming in. And if it was built up a little bit better and, you know, a little bit hotter, I think those seats would have been full. But you could definitely tell looking around. There were some patches of empty seats, and like I said, 85%, between 85 and 90 would probably be a fair assessment of what the crowd capacity was.
Awesome. Well, Frank, I really appreciate you offering to be our live correspondent tonight. Always good hearing from you, and we'll have you on again soon here on Wrestling Night in America as a co-host.
Absolutely. You know, I guess I'm officially becoming the traveling correspondent as I'm able to get the trips that I like and able to get the trips that coincide with these live events. You know, I'm happy to be the correspondent. So thank you, seniority, and let's hope that stays in place in the near future.
Excellent. Good talking to you, Frank.
All right, Greg. All right, Marcus. You guys have a good night. Appreciate it.
Take care, buddy.
All right, man.
Frank Pediani, PWTorch.com, contributor with a live report there on Double or Nothing. 515-605-9345 is the number to call. WNIALivecast@gmail.com is where you can send your emails about the show. Marcus, quick email sent in from Claude in New York. He says, could you please explain the idea of an exploding boot? I'm so lost. Of course, referencing the Anarchy in the Arena match, but would you like to proffer an explanation for that?
It's a boot that explodes.
Not much simpler than that, is it?
don't know how to break that down further than that. An exploding boot is literally a boot that explodes. Now, looks like there was a little sparkler charge that went off during the super kick. I liked it. It was, you know, a lot of folks do the flaming kick nowadays, and normally, you know, usually it goes horribly wrong. The only time I've ever seen it really successful was Kano in Pro Wrestling Noah doing it a couple times. I've not seen the exploding boot before, but it sounds like something that FMW would have done. but hey, I thought it was cool. I saw the, I've been looking at the GIF just now, and it looked cool. I wish it got a better reaction from the crowd, because that was a neat spot. I'm a simple guy, Greg. I enjoy violence. I enjoy explosions in my wrestling, and, you know, I'll go, you know what? It needs more explosions. I need to see more explosions in my pro wrestling.
Well, AEW might be the place to be, because they've had some explosions on their shows during their history. So that might be the spot for you to keep an eye on them. So what was your wrestling weekend like? We talk about, we got four big shows that happened this weekend. Did you manage to catch them all? What was your schedule like for watching those shows?
Well, it was AEW Live. NXT will probably be tomorrow morning. And then I've been catching the highlights of Night of Champions and the highlights of Impact. And then I've been, we had the New Japan Best of Super Juniors wrapping up recently. That took the bulk of my watching, catching up on that the last couple of days. It's just, you know, it's interesting when all the shows kind of line up. You know, it's like when the planets align, there's just so many different things going on. You know, I think back to when I was a kid, and I think about, man, how cool would it be if there was pro wrestling on every single day? And now I have that, and I'm just like, please make it stop. There's yes. too much. And that's, I am so thankful, you know, to you and the rest of the guys at the Torch for keeping up on everything, because, man, there are 24 hours in a day, and there's about 100 hours worth of wrestling in a day. And, you know, so having to kind of pick and choose and see, you know, what's going on. But, you know, too much of a good thing, I guess, is the best way to put it.
Yeah. It's the old, be careful what you wish for, right?
Yes. Yeah.
So let's start with Double or Nothing then. It kind of gives us a template of what to talk about here. What was your reaction to this show? Negative seems to be the reaction online. Although I think the consensus seems to be from my timeline on Twitter, which you can follow me at Greg M. Parks, seems to be that the show was maybe saved by the last couple of matches. Did you come down that harshly on the show, or were you a little more positive on it than the general reaction seems to be so far?
Oh, I came down pretty hard on it. In my head, I was thinking, you know, in a weird way, I'm almost glad I wasn't there live, because, you know, $50 for a pay-per-view versus a couple hundred for tickets and more for travel and hotels, I would have been slightly disappointed if I made the trip out. But, and as far as the show goes, I think the first half was rough. There was moments I thought were really cool. I did enjoy Battle Royal for what it was. It was just a silly spot fest, and sometimes you need that. I was a little confused on some of the spots where it was an over-the-top Battle Royal, but, you know, Commander was jumping over the top rope and hitting the floor, so was that an elimination? I don't know. That wasn't, but how Swerve was eliminated was, again, kind of a gray area there. It's kind of, AEW kind of has this history of picking and choosing when they follow their own rules. So the first half, yeah, a little on the rough side, but I definitely think it picked up with the last three or four matches.
I think we can safely say that this crowd was not what we've come to expect from AEW pay-per-view crowds. And part of me wonders if you had transported the Puerto Rico Backlash crowd onto this show or any other hot AEW pay-per-view crowd, if this had been the normal AEW pay-per-view crowd, would we have been as negative on the show as we are? Or did the wrestling on the show and the build-up earn that crowd reaction? Almost a chicken or the egg. did the bad wrestling cause the crowd reaction, or did the crowd reaction come because the wrestling and the storytelling was not where it should have been?
I'm going to say both. I know that's the easy out, that's the cop-out answer, but I'm going to say both. I think, I'll use the Puerto Rico crowd as an example. That's an awesome comparison because that crowd was amazing. And if you had that crowd during the main event, because that main event was a Puerto Rican territory match. There was blood, there was plunder, yeah. There was all kinds of just shenanigans. You know, I imagined that looked like a Carlos Colon match. Mm-hmm. And if you had that crowd in that match, I think it would have been absolutely electric. If you took a Chicago crowd, if you took an all out crowd or Forbidden Door, I think you would have had a much better reaction. You know, when I was there last year in Vegas, I thought the crowd sounded, you know, a little dead. So I don't know if it's a location thing. I don't know if it's just Vegas isn't a wrestling, you know, vibe right now. You know, there's so many places to go, and I get that they want to kind of do these theme shows and keep this, you know, the same locations for Double or Nothing and All Out. But maybe, you know, if you want to keep with the casino theme, do it next year in Atlantic City. You know, do a change of venue. I think one of the problems that AEW is running into, especially the last year or so, is running the same spots, running the same towns, running the same arenas, and you're getting diminishing returns because that show that was the hottest ticket in town just isn't. And with Vegas, you know, like every year it's more expensive to get out there. And it's a holiday weekend, so there's a big, big jump in pricing for everything. And that's going to deter a lot of people from flying in. And for this kind of a show, you're depending on a fly-in crowd because the local Vegas scene, you know, there's a decent indie scene going on right now, but it's not a hotbed, you know? So I think that definitely played a factor. And then there was just some odd decisions for the show tonight. So, you know, I can see the crowd being dead just because the crowd just was, but I can also see the crowd feeling disappointed. And you know, when Frank brought up, you know, Kenny saying, you know, I hope you're not disappointed with us, part of me does think that maybe he was talking about the show as a whole.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a struggle to get the crowd invested, and he kind of felt bad for the wrestlers. But, you know, the stories that were building up, and I think a lot of people looked at this show and said, you know, on paper it's not the strongest show from a build standpoint, and I think those chickens came home to roost with the crowd reactions tonight. You know, they had a good last hour plus with those two main events. Was it enough to save the show? I think it depends on who you're talking to. I really do. Let's go back to the phones. The 918 area code, 918, you're on Wrestling Night in America. Please state your name and where you're calling from.
Jared from Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Jared, good to hear from you tonight. What'd you think of Double or Nothing, unless you're calling to talk about any of the other big shows that we're talking about here tonight?
I I paid attention to the NXT. I watched Double or Nothing at a theater with about 30 people. So got a decent crowd reaction from that. Paid attention to the NXT, but the WWE pay-per-view Saturday was that stole the weekend. The show tonight, I thought the lineup, the booking was bad. Had they started the show with that anarchy, that crowd would have gotten involved, and the crowd might have been alive for some very boring matches like the Adam Cole, Jericho match, the most of the card. But at least the crowd would have been hyped from the beginning. And then you end with your title. I think it diminishes the world title if you're not ending your pay-per-view with a world title. If you're going to have it on the card.
I agree with that. I think that AEW has done a pretty good job of making sure their title goes on last. I think just with the chaos of the Anarchy in the Arena match, with the Takeshita turn at the end, I think in some ways that made sense to go on last. I think it was the real main event as well, Marcus, even though you have a title being defended. The pillars were not really a strong draw. This was not, on paper, it was going to be a good match, but from a draw standpoint, you know, Jungle Boy, Darby Allin, Sammy Guevara, they're not the strongest opponents even put together for an MJF. So while I understand the mantra of the title should always go on last, I could understand why Tony Khan felt that tonight Anarchy in the Arena needed to go on last.
But if you put your world title on the line, you also get all four of your pillars main eventing a pay-per-view. You only have four pay-per-views, and this way you get Jungle Boy, who probably isn't going to headline one for a long time. You get all these guys a main event. That adds some credibility to the name.
It does. I'm not sure how much that sticks, though, going forward. Like, you could say that, Jungle Boy main evented an AEW pay-per-view, but really, I mean, you could still get away with that because they called this a double main event tonight. So in the future, they're going to say, Jungle Boy main evented Double or Nothing, even though they weren't technically in the last match. Marcus, what did you think about the order there at the end? Would you have liked to have seen the title go on last?
So, I like to think that I'm pretty new school with my wrestling and how things line up. But I do believe that the world title should end the show. That being said, I will add the caveat that if you have a bigger match, then the bigger match headlines the show. And Anarchy in the Arena was the much bigger match. It had to, not taking anything away from MJF, I think he's a fantastic champion. I think he's a fantastic wrestler. But you look at Darby, Sammy, and Jungle Boy, I'm sorry, they're not there yet. They can be, they will be. I've been watching Jungle Boy live for years because he was a local guy for me for a long time, and I'm super proud of where he's at. It's been one of the highlights of my fandom is to see him keep ascending and ascending, and he will get there. Same with Darby. Sammy, he has a spot. But, I think in this case, this was the right call. Anarchy in Arena, it just was the bigger story. And I don't like saying that. It was the bigger story than your main event program or your world title program. And that is an issue in and of itself.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead and follow up that.
So the crowd that I was with was more interested in the Anarchy match. Agreed. So why not start your pay-per-view with that? When you see the crowd isn't sold out at the live event, you can get a little hype with that. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I think that would have been I don't think the Battle Royal was a bad start. I think that got the crowd into it, but they just kind of lost their way with that second match. So I'm not sure that starting the show with the Anarchy in the Arena match would have solved the problem, which is you get into the meat of the show that people weren't responding to, because they did start off hot with the Battle Royal. They responded really well to that, I thought, and then it kind of went downhill from there. So I'm not sure that
Then have it steal the show as the middle of the event. You know, let the middle of the event be the best match, because it would have been the best match.
I just think this type of match where you're brawling throughout the arena and the crowd and, you know, just the physical nature of the match makes it hard to be the first match and makes it hard to be the middle of the card. I really do. I think given the nature of this match and the just the wild and woolly nature of it, I think it would be very hard to ask someone to follow that type of match. And so that's kind of where I stand on that. Obviously, we'll just agree to disagree here. But, Jared, do you have anything else, any second question or comment for us tonight?
No, how WWE ended with the Jimmy and Jay story, it looks like there's still more to come. I'm glad that they didn't pull the string with Cody at Mania so they could finish this out. I think that it's doing its job. But I'll get off here. Thanks for listening. Thanks for always putting on a good show on Sundays.
I appreciate it, Jared. Thanks for listening, and thanks for calling.
Awesome,
so let me ask you, Marcus, about that going into Night of Champions. The Usos, the turn happens in Saudi Arabia, perhaps unfortunate timing. You would have liked to have seen that in front of a crowd here in the States, or not in front of a crowd in Saudi Arabia, I guess, for, you know, lack of a better explanation. But regardless, what was your take on Jimmy Uso's turn? This is going to be hard to come back from. This definitely felt like, okay, we're turning the page and we're really starting that next part of the Bloodline story now. It's hard. I see a very difficult path for Jimmy to come back from this. You know, we've seen the tension between Roman and the Usos. The Usos lose at WrestleMania. They cost matches, but they're always brought back into the fold. Hard to see that happening here.
Oh, for sure. I will say this new chapter in the story, you know, because we have to finish the story, is probably the most intrigued I've been since before WrestleMania. The turn, I thought the turn was really well executed. Little details, them calling Reigns by his shoot name while they're, you know, hitting him and yelling at him, just little things like that. You know, we're the Bloodline, we're the family, not you, that kind of stuff. I love that kind of stuff. Just again, I love when there's callbacks to older things. I agree that if it was in a different venue, different arena, I would probably have more of a emotional connection to what was going on. Again, with those shows, I usually just kind of stick to highlights and everything. But going back and watching what I've seen of it, I enjoyed. I do think that this is going to be. You're right. It's going to be something that's going to be difficult for them to pivot from. You know, this is going to be one of those things where they just want to lean into it and just keep it going. I'm definitely excited for SummerSlam, which is a sentence I don't say often. So we'll see how this goes. But again, this is a very interesting next chapter in this Bloodline story. So we'll see.
Let's go back to the emails. Azan from St. Louis says, "Hello, Greg. Question number one, is having a group led by Noam Dar in NXT a good idea, and what do you think about his act? Number two, could you see a Bronson Reed or someone from Judgment Day being Seth's first feud for the World Championship? And number three, do you see anything involving Kota Ibushi and CM Punk for Forbidden Door? So a real smorgasbord of questions from Azan this week. Noam Dar retaining the Heritage Cup over Dragon Lee tonight. Lash Legend, others getting involved on his behalf, Oro Mensah as well out there, some of the younger talent. I think Dar is a good heel, but I don't see him as like an upper-level heel. So I'm not sure about his leadership abilities in NXT, especially since it's just kind of, it feels like a kind of thrown together group at this point, and I'm sure it'll be fleshed out on TV because it was first introduced here tonight. I'm not sure how closely you follow NXT or the travels of Noam Dar, but what do you think about the possibility of him leading a group in NXT?
So Noam Dar, someone I've watched for a long time, way before AEW, way before any of the current stuff, I was really into the British scene for a long time, the whole UK wrestling scene. So Noam Dar was someone that popped up a lot in the stuff I was watching and getting to know about. So, you know, having him in, you know, I enjoyed his work in NXT UK, and having him in NXT proper is, you know, I think is entertaining. I like him as a wrestler. I think he's an interesting character. I agree that as a leader, I'm not 100% sold on him. As a leader, I'm sure, you know, like you say, it'll be fleshed out. We'll see where this goes. But I think he's a good mid-level, mid-card, maybe tweener, you know, but we'll see where this faction mm-hmm. goes. But if it gives him more something to do and gives him more TV time, then the more power to him. You know, I like the guy.
Seth Rollins won the world title, finishing off the tournament against AJ Styles at Night of Champions on Saturday. What do you think about Seth Rollins as the champion? And Azan lays out Bronson Reed, potentially someone from Judgment Day being his challengers. So what do you think about the decision to put the belt on Rollins, and who do you see as potential first challengers for him?
Ooh, okay. I like Seth having this new title. I'm a little confused because they were saying that it was going to continue the original lineage, and then what, yesterday, this morning, they said that, or yesterday morning, it's 10 o'clock my time. I know it's late where you're at. Go to bed, Greg. But,
yeah. I'm snoozing. I'm dozing off while you're in between my talking points. So I'm fine.
Hey,
well
rested. I've been told I have that effect on people. So just take a snooze, Greg. It's fine. No, I think I'm a little confused. You know, between the lineage of this new title. Sometimes it's a brand new title. Sometimes it's a continuation. But whatever. You know. Continuity has never really been WWE's strong point, and I'm cool with that. I really like him being the champion. I am afraid that it does feel like a secondary title at this point. Maybe that changes down the road. I'm not sure. We'll see. Now, as far as challengers, I like the idea of Bronson Reed. I've been really high on him since he came back to WWE. Seth does really well with bigger guys. You know, when you look at his stuff with, you know, I always go back to his matches with Brock Lesnar, that I really enjoyed. So when he is around someone a lot bigger than him, it really gives him a chance to show off what he can do. If you give Bronson a chance to, just be a monster heel, just completely destroying everything in his path and then getting to Seth and having a showdown, I'd watch the heck out of that. As far as, let's say, Judgment Day, Oh, see that's I don't know. You know, you could go with Finn. Again, you can have the throwback to the original Universal title match, which would be fun. I think that would be a good callback with the roles reversed, having a face Rollins and a heel Balor. But I also think Damian Priest would be a pretty interesting match.
I actually like that better right now than Balor or Bronson Reed. I think I like Bronson Reed. I like him 6 months from now as a guy. I don't want him thrown out there without a lot of buildup. So I would love to see him be a serious challenger, which means they've got some work to do to build him into a serious challenger. I think Damian Priest has really taken on that role of alpha within Judgment Day. And even though he lost to Bad Bunny, that was a star-making performance for him. And I hope WWE capitalizes that on that and builds on it, because he's an interesting and perhaps most importantly a new challenger for the titles. So I would really like to see him get the first crack at Seth Rollins, who I think was the right choice to win the title. Forget that AJ Styles is on SmackDown, and he shouldn't have been in this title tournament in the first place. And Michael Cole
yeah,
kind of mentioned in passing that, oh, you know, if AJ Styles wins, he'll probably end up coming to Raw because this is a Raw title. I'm like, really? That's how you're going to lampshade this? Just kind of like, you know, it was ridiculous. But, yeah, so I like that Seth Rollins won. And then the last question is on hand. Anything involving Kota Ibushi or CM Punk for Forbidden Door? Punk, I can see. I mean, Kota Ibushi... The tough thing is Forbidden Door is like New Japan AEW, and I'm not really sure what kind of terms Kota Ibushi is on with New Japan, since it seemed to end poorly. But, you know, Kenny Omega saying what he said at the conclusion of AEW, now that, you know, Kota Ibushi could come to AEW and not be a part of the New Japan part of Forbidden Door. I don't know the logistics behind that, but... certainly you would expect Punk as a strong possibility, since he'll be back by then, I believe. And then, you know, it's just a matter of slotting guys in the right places. I mean, I think Ibushi, you know, Punk is going to be is gonna have a short time to build up whatever they do at Forbidden Door. But I think, you know, it's also kind of an all-hands-on-deck, only the top stars in AEW against the top New Japan stars, or, you know, the top from both on the show, and CM Punk certainly fits that bill. So I think there's a good chance both are on the show in some form or fashion.
Completely agree. With Kota, last I checked, things were better between him and New Japan. You know, they're not going to be, you know, hanging out and grabbing a beer, but they're on speaking terms, which is a big improvement from where we were at last year. So we'll see. You know, being that this is a joint show with New Japan and AEW, it does kind of test the waters of that relationship a little bit. I'd love to see Kota at Forbidden Door. I want to see Kota in AEW, just completely honest. You know, with the Elite back, and that, you know, now you can throw in the Golden Elite as they were way back when, which seems like a lifetime ago, but you know, hey, it's wrestling. So I would really enjoy seeing him at Forbidden Door. I think you can play off of Kota's reputation of being a free agent. That's always been his thing. His official signing to New Japan was a big deal because he never signed contracts. He loved being the, you know, the artist, the free reign. You know, I go where I want, I do what I want. So we'll see. You know, maybe he falls back into that. Punk, Punk's an interesting case because of every time, you know, I always think of Piper, and, you know, just when you think we have all the answers, I change all the questions. And to me, that's very CM Punk right now. Just anytime we think we have a roadmap and a game plan for, hey, this is for sure happening, CM Punk goes on Instagram or social media and completely derails it. So with him, you don't know. But I think if they really, I know ticket sales are doing really well for Wembley, and see where they go for that. And with Punk, that might be something that crosses the finish line. He is CM Punk, like him or not, depending on, you know, where you're at with him as a wrestler, as a person, or whatever, he's CM Punk. He's going to make ticket sales. It's going to happen. So as far as he goes, you know, I think you're right. It's just a matter of where he's going to be, you know. Who do you put him up against? I think it's a million-dollar question. Do you do what you did when they brought him back the first time and have kind of an exhibition against a Darby Allin type, bringing someone, you know, kind of on that level? Do you throw him in right against? It's not going to happen, but I'll say a Kenny Omega. You know, it all depends on where he's at and how much he wants to play ball. But I think he's definitely someone who's you have to have on that show.
All right, back to the phones. The 313 area code, 313, you're on Wrestling Night in America. Please state your name and where you're calling from. Hello, 313, you're on the air.
Oh, hey. How's it going, Greg?
Hi. I'm doing well. How are you?
So, I'm pretty good. What do you think about Double or Nothing, the end? I think they were trying to position some talent like Chris Danlander and Wheeler Yuta and some others. Are these the right talent to be pushing forward to gain a better audience for AEW?
I think that, you know, and I tweeted about this too, Wheeler Yuta has, you know, being part of the BCC has done wonders for Wheeler Yuta. I mean, you look at some of the same guys who were in his position way back before he joined the group, and he, as a commodity within AEW, is light years ahead of them. So I think it's done wonders for Wheeler Yuta. Chris Statlander, you know, you can quibble about her being the person to knock off Jade Cargill. I would have gone with Willow Nightingale way back when, and I'm glad I wasn't wrong on that because she's really shining in ROH now as well. So, you know, I think that, look, this takes time, right? You use the known commodities, the Chris Jerichos, the Kenny Omegas, the Young Bucks, to hold the fort down in the main events and draw the ratings while you're bringing up that younger generation, the Orange Cassidys, the Wheeler Yutas, the Chris Statlander. So are they going to have an effect right away? No, but you're building for 2, 3, 4 years down the line with these guys, Marcus. And I think they're the right choices. You know, the only thing with Statlander is her injury history. Hopefully she's beaten that. But I think in terms of the kinds of people they are, in terms of the kind of workers they are, I think they're the right people to kind of build around.
Okay.
Oh, for sure. Chris was – her return was from me, my pop of the night. I heard her music and saw her come out and legit jumped out of my couch. So I'm so glad to see her back. Giving her this push with this title, I'm excited for it. I do wonder how her knees are going to hold up, but if they're good to go, you know, I always thought she's a very talented wrestler. And with this title, she's really getting that shot that I've been wanting her to have since she arrived in AEW. As far as Wheeler goes, Wheeler got the pin on Kenny Omega. So as I'm saying that out loud, Wheeler Yuta got the pin on Kenny Omega. That's something. that's something ever that I'd say out loud. That's something I think I've done in Fire Pro Wrestling a few times, but never, you know, said it out loud.
Yeah.
I think with this, especially with Wheeler, you know, putting him with Blackpool was great. You know, he's a great wrestler, but he needed something. He needed, I'm not saying he needed a character, but he needed a little bite to him, and putting him with
needed an edge.
A little bit, you know. It's one thing to just be, you know, I'm a really good wrestler. That's cool. There's so many wrestlers that are just really good wrestlers. You know, I kind of put him in the same category. I put Daniel Garcia, same thing. Very good wrestler. Needed a little bit of an edge. Put him with JAS, and he's super over. Yuta, put him with Blackpool. He's getting there. And the fact that he pinned Kenny, I think they're gonna roll with that, and he's gonna just be in. And I mean this in the best possible way. I think he's gonna be an inseparable jerk, and I'm all for that. I'm very much waiting to see him just be a complete jerk face about all this. So let's go.
All right. Anything else for us tonight?
Yeah. So this is the first time in a long time that the world championship did not headline the show. Do you think it's a good case to have MJF still hold the title if he can't even headline the show?
We talked about headlining the show with one of the previous callers. I don't think that's any kind of I don't think it says anything negative about MJF's drawing power. I just think it's the Anarchy in the Arena match. You do that once a year. You have the AEW title on the line four or five times a year on pay-per-view. So I think the specialness and the uniqueness of that match in this particular instance, especially when you look at the challengers and the level that they are on, they're not really main event level guys. I think this is one of the few exceptions that are allowed for not having the title in the main event. I think when you look at the Anarchy in the Arena match and how it played out, it's hard for me to see that being effective anywhere else on the card and not negatively affecting the other matches that would follow it. So that's kind of how I would sum up my feelings. I know we already talked about it, Marcus, but that's kind of how I would sum up my feelings on the AEW world title not being the last match of this show tonight.
Yeah, for sure. I was thinking about last year's Double or Nothing, and Anarchy in the Arena was, if I remember right, it was about the midpoint of the show, maybe the latter half, but there were still a few matches before or afterwards, and it did. Every match after it, minus the main event last year, did kind of feel like, okay, we just had this really cool, hardcore plunder match. Where do we go from here? And that was kind of the theme for the rest of the night last year. So having it at the last match of the night, I think made sense. I was kind of perusing Twitter a little bit. And I see that MJF kind of kayfabed it a little bit at the post-show press conference by saying he didn't want to go on after Anarchy in the Arena because he didn't want to roll around in Jon Moxley's blood, which I thought was a nice touch to kind of rationalize it a little bit. I think because of how the Anarchy in the Arena match is structured, I think they saw how where it lined up last year and thought, this needs to be a main event. And like I said earlier, Anarchy in the Arena had the bigger names. I'm sorry to say, but it's just you, Kenny Omega. And I'm not taking anything away from the quote unquote pillars. I'm not, but to me, you look at a Kenny or a Moxley, and to me, there's a level up from Jungle Boy and Sammy Guevara and Darby. Now, as far as MJF is concerned, I don't think it's indicative of that he needs to drop the title at all. He's MJF. So he can play off of this for a while. He already started. I just think that it's just the nature of the match. It's just, I think they learned their lesson from last year.
Well, one more quick thing. Do you think it was a mistake to not have CM Punk make an appearance tonight?
I don't think so. I think they want to save that pop for Chicago. I think it also would have taken away from Takeshita's turn at the end to have Punk come out. I'm not really sure what reason he would have had to come out either, or where in the card you would have had him come out, Marcus. So for all those reasons, I think you want to hold him off for that Chicago pop.
For sure. You're going to want to hold off for that Chicago show. Earlier we talked about audiences and different cities, and, you know, that Chicago crowd is always something special. And if you're going to bring back CM Punk again, you're going to want to do it in Chicago. I would have been cool with maybe a reference or two, but not going overboard with it and nothing super overt. Because you want to make that collision show feel like a pay-per-view. And that's something that, you can do if you have CM Punk as its first appearance back in this this next run.
All right. Appreciate the phone call tonight.
Thank you, Greg. Thank you, Marcus. Appreciate you.
Hey, take care, bud. Thank you.
All right, Marcus, we'll end on an Impact note because I noticed you said you're working your way through Under Siege. I'm not sure if you had seen or heard what happened in the main event, but Bully Ray and Steve Macklin teaming up to put Scott D'Amore, fabled babyface savior Scott D'Amore, through a flaming table at the end of the show for heat,
real heat,
because it's fire. I generally like a lot of what Impact does, even though if it is low impact stuff, to turn a phrase, I suppose. But the booking of Scott D'Amore as this like top, I think it speaks more to like the lack of baby faces, top tier baby faces in Impact, that Scott D'Amore has to play that role. Like there's no one better that you could put there. And the problem is with Josh Alexander on the shelf, there really isn't. Not defending the choice to have Scott D'Amore come out and play this babyface role where he's getting all the heat on him. But, a strange choice for a company who seems to do a lot of the other small things right.
Yes. I'm going to say it, but, where's the heat, brother? You got to have the heat, brother. And we do have literal heat with this. Scott D'Amore, man, he's just one of those figures in wrestling that, when I think about Team Canada in the early TNA days, if you're ever going to tell me that 20-some years later he'd be not just running Impact, essentially, but also being their top baby face for the moment, I'd wonder what you were doing, because that's a sentence that I never thought would actually, come to fruition. But I do think, he does kind of represent Impact, again, with that history, with him being a part of the resurgence over the last couple of years of the Anthem era. So to me, it makes sense. But it is definitely telling that, they are kind of lopsided on the heels right now. But we'll see. When Josh Alexander comes back, I'm still hoping for some sort of Team Canada 2.0 at some point. So who knows? Maybe we'll get that at some point. Man, if that's the case, then take my money, because I'd be all over that. But as it stands right now, Bully Ray is Bully Ray, man. He finds ways to pop up in places, and he finds ways to keep himself relevant, which is a skill, especially in pro wrestling. So, he's doing his thing, and if beating up Scott D'Amore is the best way to get heat right now and impact, then the more power to him. But, you know, I do think this is going to make someone step up to kind of be the to champion the spirit of Impact. And if that's returning Josh Alexander, then great. I think that'd be a heck of a return and a heck of a program.
Two more questions before we call tonight. Last one on Impact. Jordynne Grace's contract is reported to have expired. Where do you sense that she ends up? To me, I think she could end up almost anywhere. I think she could fit WWE. I think she could fit AEW. She could go to Japan. I think it'd be very successful there. What's your sense on what the best fit might be for Jordynne Grace?
So I was half expecting her to show up tonight at Double or Nothing.
Yeah. You're not the only one.
I kind of leaning that way. But, you know, with New Japan USA really pushing their women's division, could see her going there. And if that brings a connection to Stardom, then awesome, because Jordynne Grace and Julia, again, take my money, because I would watch the heck out of that. Jordynne Grace is definitely someone that I think can go anywhere. I think, pardon the pun, but I think where she can make the biggest impact right now, as far as just kind of setting herself up to be someone different in someplace different. I would almost say MLW. They're working hard on getting their women's division really up and running. The problem with MLW is kind of the same issue that Ring of Honor had back in the day, where you have such a delay in tapings that your current champion is no longer with the company, and that's the product that's being aired right now. So it does kind of get this kind of weird time warp thing going on with MLW, but I can see them bringing her in and really kind of taking it to a new level. WWE though would be a fantastic fit. I think they don't have a whole lot of power wrestlers in the women's division for either show outside of a few names, and so you put her in there, and I think she can do really well. Jordynne Grace is just one of those wrestlers that fits in anywhere she goes. She's been spectacular since joining Impact. So, we'll see where she winds up. I think AEW is probably where we're going to go, but I'd like to see her. I'd love to see her in a New Japan or Stardom adjacent program.
I think the most intriguing thing to me is WWE. I mean, Jordynne Grace versus Rhea Ripley, Jordynne Grace versus Charlotte, Jordynne Grace versus Bianca Belair versus Becky Lynch. I think all of those matchups are really attractive to me. And, you've got a need for that, a new top woman. They haven't developed top women all that tremendously. I think that's why you're seeing Asuka as the next challenger already for Bianca Belair here at Night of Champions. It's just they haven't developed those top women, and Jordynne Grace could walk in and be a top woman right away and face a lot of those women. The last question, Claude emails in again. He says, I think they have effectively killed Cody Rhodes' WWE return. I couldn't care less if he eventually wins the new world title. Do you agree? And this is coming from someone who vehemently did not like Cody Rhodes losing at WrestleMania. I also think that Cody is far from done. I think you can question the finish of him losing via ref stoppage at Night of Champions to Brock Lesnar. I certainly question booking him to survive a Kimura for minutes at a time with a broken arm. I don't know how that's humanly possible. But anyway, he has the gift of gab, and he can talk people back into the building. He can talk people back into his storyline. So I'm not ready to jump off the Cody Rhodes train quite yet. Marcus, where are you on Cody at this point?
You know, when I talked to you during Wrestle or after WrestleMania, you know, I was talking about how angry the crowd was because a lot of people expected Cody to win. I expected Cody to win, and people were legitimately upset when he didn't. And they keep, in hindsight, I'm thinking, you know, it was the right call, just because they do really want to push out this story. They want to keep it going. Eventually, they're going to want to end it, and the question becomes when. If they do it at SummerSlam, we'll see. If they wait a whole year for next WrestleMania, that's a possibility. But as far as Cody goes, you know, I think I'm not giving up on him yet, because he's Cody Rhodes. You know, he does have that innate ability to just get sympathy, even if you. If you indulge him in his over the top entrances and his just demeanor and the way he carries himself, you on face value you want to boo him. You want to boo him for, or at least I do. But then you get wrapped up in what he's saying, and then all of a sudden it's just, you know, I don't like you. But all of a sudden, I want to see you succeed. And with Cody, it's going to happen. It's just a matter of what title does he – but if, you know, excuse me, if that's the case, then it has to be Roman. Because if you take it from, let's say, Seth Rollins, I'm watching him – we're watching Seth get the title right now. I don't think it has the same meaning. And so if you want to legitimize Cody Rhodes, if you want to legitimize his return to WWE, it's Roman. It has to be Roman. It's just a matter of, mm-hmm. of when.
Yeah. All right, Marcus, that takes us to the end. I really appreciate you offering to jump on here tonight and help me out running through all these shows and taking these calls and emails. So go ahead and plug where fans can find your work at The Torch and where they can find you on social media.
All righty. Well, Greg, first off, thank you for having me again, man. This is always a blast. And I know the last couple of times we tried to get something going on. Schedules haven't lined up, so I'm real happy that for once everything kind of lined up and getting to talk to you and getting to talk to the callers and the emailers. This is always a tremendous treat for me to talk wrestling with you guys. As far as The Torch goes, you can catch my stuff. I am the TV correspondent for MLW. We're going to be I took a bit of a break due to a couple reasons, but I'm back. And as Eric Bischoff once said, better than ever. So you'll be seeing me for MLW. I tend to write about Pro Wrestling NOAH every now and then. We got a couple big shows lined up for them, so going to be doing some writing for that. And maybe some Ring of Honor. You know, that was something that we've been talking back and forth a little bit on the Torch. So might have some Ring of Honor stuff coming down the pipeline, which is a really cool thing because Ring of Honor was what brought me back into wrestling in 2002, 2003. So really excited for that opportunity. Social media-wise, Twitter, Mega Man Mex, that's usually where you'll find me. Instagram as well, same handle. But yeah, so just I want to say, yeah, thanks to you and everyone at The Torch and everyone that's coming, calling in. This has been a great night with a great weekend. And, you know, before I officially sign off, just guys, if you're listening and you like this, man, go VIP. Just go VIP on The Torch right now because it's the best decision I ever made. So y'all should go do that.
Great last plug there, Marcus. Thanks for joining me again tonight.
Take care, my friend. Good talking to you tonight. Go to sleep.
Absolutely. That is in the cards very soon. Thanks, everybody, for joining us here tonight on an action-packed weekend. Catch us next week at our normal start time, 8 p.m. Eastern, pwtorchdailycast.com is where you can listen live. We'd love to hear your calls and emails. You can email us throughout the week, wnialivecast@gmail.com, and we'll read the questions via email just as we did tonight live on the show. You can follow me on Twitter, @GregMParks. I am Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks, and we'll talk to you next Sunday, because if it's Sunday, it's wrestling night in America.